Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What is collusion? The dictionary quotes it as a secret or illegal cooperation or conspiracy in order to deceive others. In Northern Ireland, far too many know its devastating reality. On November the 9th, 1997, 22-year-old Raymond McCord Jr. was lured to the grounds of a disused quarry on the outskirts of Belfast. There, members of the Ulster Volunteer Force brutally beat him to death. His injuries were so severe, he could only be identified through his fingerprints. His murder sparked one of the most damning public inquiries into the workings of the UVF and the paramilitary gang's close workings with the RUC. Operation Ballast, headed by then Police Ombudsman Nuala O'Loan, revealed how paramilitary killers were protected from prosecution because they were police agents. The 2007 report also exposed UVF Commander Mark Haddock as a high-ranking police informant who carried out several murders, beatings and gun attacks whilst being on the payroll of the security forces. It was estimated he'd been paid more than £80,000 for information whilst his unit conducted a reign of terror in North Belfast and Mid-Ulster. It was on Haddock's orders that Raymond McCord Jr. was murdered. Today, his father speaks to No Edit about the son he lost and his family's battle to finally get justice for his killing. Campaigner Raymond McCord Sr. also reveals his own battles with paramilitaries and how a UVF threat in his life remains active to this very day. Raymond, you're very welcome on today's podcast. Tell me a bit about growing up in North Belfast in the 1950s. You were born in 1950.
Right.
That was before the Troubles. So what was life like then?
Well, I was born there behind Gallagher's factory in York Street. It was a real working class community. Most of the people worked in the mills, father and mother, the aunts and uncles, and most of them were unskilled workers. The men was labourers. York Street was full of pubs. Every street corner seemed to be a pub in it, and around the back streets, eight pubs. But it was a real, not just the wee bit that we lived in, but around York Street and the docks. It was a real community hub, as people would call it now. The simplest way would be people looked after each other. Growing up, like I was a few years old when we moved to Rathcoole. It's a class now, it's part of North Belfast. And growing up, primary school and this here and going up in the estate, New York Street, I don't recall sectarianism. The Troubles started. Your friends, you played football with your friends. The top of our street, Grove Street, across the road, it ran on the North Queen Street, was a New Lodge Road. I can't remember anybody ever talking about trouble between the ones in our street and ones on New Lodge Road, because my mother worked in the mill, and she used to talk when she got older about the mill, what it was like, and their friends, and to have an old photograph of her in the mill. They're working up her feet, so the heat and the water there, and all her friends was there. And you see a smile on their faces. And they were Protestant Catholic and religion, but more importantly, they were friends. It's as simple as that, you know. And my father, his friends, he some dart teams. Foreigners, brothers, all loved the darts. And his friends, a man would tell me one time, Jimmy Saunders from the New Lodge, and one of his sons became a well-known Republican. His father was in the Orange Order. He was in the Blacks, and he was in the Apprentice Boys. I can never remember, as a kid, them talking about religion, or their friend was Protestant, their friend was Catholic. We're just friends. Politicians exploited them.
So when did you see it start to turn, Raymond, because you would have been a teenager when the troubles kicked off? Was it just before the violence broke out in the street, or?
Nah, it was after the troubles was being started in Belfast and Shanklin Falls, sort of there, and Springfield, sort of there. There were streets, you know, I have friends that the streets are off of Springfield, and they hear them talking about Bombay Street and all this here. I couldn't have told you where Bombay Street was. It was only lately. I was going around past it, and a couple of streets around that way, seeing friends, and I seen him. After all these years, it was only the last couple of months. But we're going away before came to Rathcoole. Rathcoole was a mixed estate. The majority was Protestant. But I don't ever recall anything religious in Rathcoole. Going up, the football team I played for. The Star ones were considered it a Catholic football team or a Catholic club. For me, a football club, you know. I think anybody played in that team while they were playing. There was no religious discrimination or mention. The guy that run the club had a sign up in when the trouble started that no badges were being worn, which reflect either on the Protestant side or the Catholic side. And that was good. It's years later, you think about it, then you didn't think much of it because none of us wore them. See, and he was doing his best to keep it away from the club. I look at the ones that played in the team. Terry Nicol, who went to school with me, from Rathcoole. Jordy Hussey from Rathcoole. Bobby Sons from Rathcoole. Tommy O'Neill from Rathcoole. Johnny Corlett from Rathcoole.
Do you remember Bobby Sons?
Yeah.
What was he like?
I remember somebody asked me that years ago in a documentary. I says, Bobby Sons was like everybody else in the team. He was part of teams of footballer. He didn't live too far, a couple of streets from us in Rathcoole. And people were trying to emphasize about Bobby Sons' hunger striker. I didn't know Bobby Sons' hunger striker. I knew Bobby Sons, 16, 17 year old, who played the same team as me. It's as simple as that. No politics, no religion. We had the best junior side in the whole of Ireland, because we win it every competition. And again, it shows you what the. Now, what people would call cross-community team. It was a cross-community team. It was a football team. It's the politicians, academics brought this stuff in, cross-community, the term. It was a team made up of young lads who was doing what they loved, was play football. Then, nobody exploited us. No political people got involved with us. It was just about sport. It was doing somewhat which we enjoyed. The team broke up as the troubles really started coming to Rathcoole. Guys out of the team, Protestant players, were afraid to go down the club. Someone wanted to make a choice. They felt as if they had a choice because of the troubles. You had to go on one side or the other. I didn't feel that way. I continued to play at the Star. Even eventually, when they left it, I drove down every so often to go in the club to see them once. And it just felt as if you hadn't been away. So the religious side of it didn't interest me. No effect. People, as I got older, I was playing at the Star, 18 and all, 19. They would have made comments. People from my community, guys, we stay comments. But it,
because you were playing alongside Catholics?
Yeah. The comments, obviously, were religious comments. You know, they weren't Catholic. They were calling them playing for a Fenian team. You know, that are nonsense.
Do you think were people made to fear each other? Different religions back then, that the trust had completely gone and it was kind of instilled in people to fear, which led to hatred.
People instilled fear in people. There's people took advantage of it for their own gains, have some form of power within their own community. But our politicians didn't help to get rid of that fear. They encouraged it.
Let's talk about paramilitaries, Raymond, because like you said, There were people who were instilling fear in communities. Was there an expectation for people in your community to join paramilitaries, most definitely support them, but join up as well?
Yeah. Once and all, the thought guys from my age sort of group thought it was like joining a big gang. People who you run the streets with, get involved with paramilitaries. They thought they were great guys.
And what was your view of them back then?
I didn't like them and they didn't like me.
So had you always been against paramilitaries, Raymond?
Yeah, yeah. Those people weren't going to turn me into something that I couldn't be and I didn't want to be. You know, the easy option would have been to join them, be one of the boys and all. Gangs and going around there with balaclavas on and putting people out of their houses or thinking of you control the estate. And the benefits that come with it, people were afraid of you. If people's going to be afraid of you, it has to be for more than a reason of being a paramilitary. You know, the decent people weren't afraid of you. It was the bully boys who were afraid of you.
Did you have any brushes with paramilitaries back then?
Melly. Bridges, many a fight.
And when we're talking about paramilitaries, would Rathcoole have had a mix of UDA, UVF, or was there just one group that was?
There's all sorts of paramilitaries on it. And the two organisations, I had many a fight with members from both the organisations. All short of it, I wasn't going to be bullied, or I wasn't going to let them tell me what I could do, or what I'm supposed to do, or anything like this here, you know. And when it came to it, they were showing up as thugs because none of them could fight in the street with their fists.
In Rathcoole, you started a family. And tell me about your family.
My family was, my wife was Phoebe, but Rathcoole and my sons were young Raymond, Gareth and Glenn, three sons.
A tough area to bring up three boys when you're surrounded by those types of influences on them.
It was an everyday thing for me and grew up through it also. I didn't see it as a tough thing to do. My sons were great lads, turned into great men. I didn't have trouble with them, and Fabian didn't have trouble with them. They were close to me, and they were, like me, they all loved football and sport. The youngest lad, Glenn, he would have been a professional footballer, only for Raymond's mother. He was that good. He was over at Chelsea. He was in the middle of different clubs after him. All that. He was some footballer. It was, but Raymond and Gareth, both good footballers. There was no trouble with them. There was nobody coming at the house or at the door and complaining about the sons. Show respect to people. You weren't having to go to school to see the teachers because they were doing something wrong in school. I look at that, what they turned into. Gareth and Glenn, their own families. And I look at the way they treat their families and I'm proud of them. Stand up for themselves and start on. I'm going to run over to my dad here and get my dad. And paramilitaries leave them alone. They get a lot more peace than I ever had. And I'm glad, you know, I never wanted to go away around. They work. They don't depend on intimidating people or extorting people like the gangsters do within the unionist community. And like myself, they have no time for our politicians within unionism because they failed my family and relating to not just young Raymond's murder, but many incidents relating to paramilitaries. The police just didn't want to know. Police preferred that my son seen it, they arrest me on many occasions rather than the paramilitaries. Paramilitaries made complaints against myself, you know, and appeared in court several times in trial, not for hitting good people, but fighting my paramilitaries. They picked on me and they came off second best. They went to the police and I stood trial twice, and each time was found not guilty. These were cases where paramilitaries, one occasion that three of them had several times, it hit my sons. They were one individual, a bunch of them. So I went and seen the Emmons and I heard them. They wanted to hit my sons. But I didn't go with baseball bats or iron bars or guns or balaclavas. I went to wherever they were. I dished it out to the Emmons. They made it quite clear. Me, early on, I found we didn't want any trouble. My sons and all, particular. But this is what happens when you go after somebody in my family.
And was this after Raymond's murder?
No, it's before. Again, sometimes after.
So you were bringing up your boys and still throughout it all, there's the common denominator of paramilitaries and the threats and intimidation, even towards your sons, which must have been tough because you feel that you have to keep them safe as well as keeping yourself safe.
My priority was I wanted to make sure my family was safe. And to make sure your family was safe, you don't want it to, well, one of three things. You just took it. You moved away or you stood up to them. These people turn around and the do-gooders that turn around and say, you're as bad as them, Raymond, if you do that. Well, is they're going to resort to mob rule, because that's what it was, mob rule, the thugs. They didn't have to take what comes with it. There's no paramilitary going to tell my family what to do. There's no paramilitaries that's going to hit my sons and think they'll get away with it.
What ages were your sons when they were being attacked?
One witness, terrible scene, shooting at the house. He was 10 years of age. He was there. Other ones there were 16, 17, 18. It's strange. Raymond, when he joined the Air Force, and he came home from leave a few days before Christmas, and he rung me. And he says, "Dad, will you pick me up?" He says, "A couple of fellas at me. Had him a ding the chin." And he says, "That's for your dad. We'll get him next time. We're paramilitaries." So I picked him up, took him up to his mother's house, and then found out who they were. There was three guys. They were men. Like, asked about and found out the house they were in. I went to the house, seen them, and the three of them ended up hurt. There's no baseball bats, anything they say. The three of them got hurt. Told them I had to go near my sons. They got the police for me. And one of them learned a lesson. Thought he was a real tough guy. He was in one of their punishment squads. And he had another son. So I went to the house, and the two sons in the car. I just stay in the car. And I went to the door. Rod Cool. He came out. I told him, and I looked back and laughed at him because people in the state went, I says, "You had a certain son." I said, "So I'm going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to have you hit me." And he lifted his hand. Before he hit me, I hit him. It's easy to stand up to bullies. These people, if somebody goes to the police, their house gets attacked, they get attacked, and their family members gets attacked. And the people go to the police, if a mob attacks them, three or four ones, or sometimes more baseball bats, if they do it, they have to withdraw their statements, or else they get it worse. But it's unheard of. The paramilitaries were going to the police about me.
People would say, "Well, you're as bad as them because you use violence, and no one can condone violence." But you're saying that you felt going to the police was not an option. Why?
Because, first and foremost, a lot of these people, the bosses were working for the police. It didn't make any difference why you made a statement against these people. Nothing was being done. They could do whatever they wanted, no matter what they wanted to do, and carry on in the estate. Right. And the whole district was, well, it was North Belfast, South West Belfast, East. They could do what they wanted. Their communities lived in fear of them. Again, the police weren't there protecting the people who needed protecting. They were protecting the paramilitaries, and they continued to this day still to do it. Make no mistake about it, we'll see it. When do we ever hear of a senior paramilitary being charged with offences? Well, drugs is terrible. Which the police has made more statements enough over East Belfast UVF. People are aware who the leadership is and the cronies that run about them, the wannabes, right, who defend these people. And yet, none of the leadership gets arrested. My own personal belief is there's no leadership within unionism. There's no real leadership. And to be show leadership, the people in the unionist community want the leaders, the so-called leaders of unionism, to speak out, name these people, call them out for what they are. Gangsters, drug dealers, extortionists and murderers.
Tell me about Raymond Jr.
Raymond Jr., good lad. He was 22 when he was murdered. A few weeks shy of his 23rd birthday. Growing up, no problems with him. Close to him. When me and his mum split up, separated, divorced and all now, it didn't. Didn't drive us apart in any way. He was always close to me, the same as the other two sons. There's no difference. He went to Hofield School, Balmorath School. He had always plenty of friends. And as he got older, he had always plenty of girlfriends. So he had. And it was amazing. One day, St. Patrick's Day, I was in a pub in Belfast with a couple of mates. There was a couple of girls at the bar. And one of them, sitting on the stool, just turned around and spoke to me. And she said, "Just spoke, how you doing, Rowan?" And I didn't know her, a young girl, nice looking girl. And she says, "I was in your house. I lived in York Road at the time." I says, "I were never in my house." And my mates looked at me like a baby snatching or something. I says, "Where were you in my house?" I says, "I don't know." Raymond had brought her to my house. It was a girlfriend. I know where she lived, Andersonstown. And talked to me. And I was glad she said that in front of the guys. I thought it was chancing my arm or something. But on our occasion, I saw a girl come to me. This girl said something similar, and she was from East Belfast, Dundonald, so it was, you know. And they all spoke well. And I don't think there's too many parents would say, this, you know, "Never heard my son curse in his life." Once, when he referred to what paramilitary said about me. Well, that's the only time, but there was no way of complaining because he lived in my house when I grew up. It didn't happen in my house. He did use bad language. He didn't use it in front of me. And I never seen him drink a beer in front of me. He would come into a bar sometimes with one of our sons, called in to see me. And he used to say, we'll go and see my dad in the afternoon because it's the best time to get a few quid on. He's a few beers on. And they feel sorry for us. You know, like any kids. He would have come in and we'd drink orange or Coke. You know, total respectful. Unlike me, he didn't get in fights.
So a respectful young man who joined the Air Force. When did he join? What age?
He's about 16. Remember him getting sworn in. And Benalder Grove.
Must have been a proud day.
Oh, it was great. Smashing lad.
What were the circumstances of Raymond's murder? I mean, was it something that had been building? Was there intimidation?
Circumstances were that Mark Haddock, UVF commander, proven special bronze agent, deal alone as police ombudsman report, which the British government accepted, Chief Constable accepted, and the Secretary of State at the time, Peter Hayne, accepted. The whole unit were special bronze informants. The so-called loyalist UVF killing squad from Mount Vernon were all protected by a special bronze. When Raymond came out of the Air Force, he got friendly with a guy, one of the most treacherous, hateful people ever walked this earth, Darren Judas Muir, and Greg Orme, who was appeared in court numerous occasions, serious charges, and he always seemed to get the charges dropped. Even statements are made against him, he gets his charges dropped.
Muir was a member of the UVF. Was Raymond a member of the UVF?
Raymond, and people have asked me this at times, and they always get the truth, when Raymond was murdered, he was not a member of the UVF.
He was not?
He was not. And I'll tell you why. I know. After his murder, I met UVF leadership on the Shago. People told me not to go, so it was a trap. I went and seen them. There were three senior people sitting there, very senior ones. They're the leadership. I met them in this club. Gangsters on the door, their black coats, hands across the coat, guns. And I asked them a question when they went in. And us one man in particular, who'd been charged with UVF Southeast Antrim, he's dead, and I, Rob Warnick, who worked for the police too. And I says, my son, member of UVF. And Rob Warnick, the other two looked at him. He says, no. And then he says, he'd been a member for a short while. I says, a short, he says, a very short while, so what, it was weeks or what? I said, what happened? He says, he was put out of it. I says, why? And he says, he hadn't been schooled. That was his words. I didn't know he meant, hadn't been schooled. Because Warnick was brain dead, he couldn't school anybody about anything. He was just a drunk. So the at the funeral, Warnick didn't come to it. The UVF man came. They didn't come near me. People knew. We didn't know who had killed Raymond at that time. We thought it was UDA. And there's one of the senior people come over. He said, Raymond, you find out who it is. Or if we find out, we'll tell you. And you deal the way you see fit. If you don't, we'll deal with it. I never spoke to that person ever again. You know, but they were wanting to know what I knew.
Were the UVF trying to cover it up?
Aye, but then didn't see it. But what happened was Raymond, it came off a boat in Scotland, a car. I would never get at the bottom of this even. And the police says I found drugs on cannabis and he was charged. Police come to my house that morning. It was a Saturday morning. And I lived beside the police station in York Road. And it says, your son's been arrested. He's in court this morning. I couldn't believe it because he'd never been in trouble in his life. And I went down to court and he was in the dock. The way and towards and it was your man in custody. So the police let me see him, so it down the cell or a room or something, the court, I forget. And he, I always remember his face. And I walked in, and he felt ashamed. It wasn't a case of some cocky young fella that's here. Put his head down. He looked at me, couldn't look me straight in the eyes. What happened? And tell me, and he says, have you come up to see you? I better talk. And I come up to see him in the jail. And he got bail after a while. And I heard the UVF one saying that he was giving information to the police. And that's just, the touts were complaining, trying to say somebody else was giving information to the police. But what happened was, and he didn't know this, I had a great friend in Downpatrick, Nancy Gracie, belonged to a group called FAITE, F-A-I-T, Families Against Intimidation Terror. Nancy was a real lady. And I was involved with her wee group. Raymond was being threatened in prison. He wasn't in any loyalist wing. So if he belonged to the UVF and he was doing drugs for him, that's here. He wasn't in any loyalist wing. He was on a landing in the prison. And he was being threatened by Republicans. And what had happened was one of the prison officers had told these Republican ones belonged to the Republican organization that Raymond had been in the RAF. So they seen that as a target. And the threatening him in the prison. And again, it wasn't fair. And he told me. So the day he told me in the visit, there was a table that said it was a guy, or there was two or three guys visiting him, all on the Republican organization. He says, no, don't look over. And no one's talking about him. That's the guy threatening him. And he says, don't be away, not be threatening no more. So I seen the guys outside the prison waiting on him. And I said to him, it's my son in there. One of the screws that said he was in the RAF. I said, that's right. He's not in now. If anything happens to him in prison, anybody comes up to visit him, and I'm on a visit, come up to visit your friend, when he was a Republican, when they come out of the prison, whatever happens to my son, I'd make it a lot worse than each individual comes up. So I'd give you violence back. I said, I prefer that didn't happen, but it's easy to sort it. And I said, people in your community will know me through the door, and I don't make trouble. Give them a credit. I got a call that night. A guy, a friend who knew somebody, and I said, that won't happen no more to your son. But Nancy Gracie gave me a letter, and the letter what had happened was happening to my son in prison. And we went for bail. And we got bail, but I had to go and get money and borrow money, and had to bring it down to court. He got bail that day. The police made it as hard as they could that day, because one of the policemen actually was there, says, how do we know yours father, Ian McCord? And I says, well, he's arrested me in the past. You know, they don't have anything they could.
When Raymond was caught with cannabis, how much cannabis was he caught with?
Well, there's a dispute even over that. And what happened was, when he was in bail, we went to the Anson Road police station. He says, no, I got a call from the police here to go up and collect my clothes. Will you go with me? Because it wasn't that far, really, in the car. And I said, sir, he said, I don't want to go to the police station on my own. So we went up in the Andrew Road police station there, and as soon as I went in, this guy called him in their room, nearly facing him that we're sitting. He was in a couple of minutes again, I heard him shouting, he jumped up and he opened the door and he came out. They tried to get him to become an informer.
So they tried to recruit him. At that stage, did you have any inkling that he was involved with paramilitaries?
Oh, aye. That there, because he says he's talking about Darren Muir.
And how did that make you feel, Raymond? Because you'd been fighting these people your whole life, and then your son was mixed up in it.
And words real. Told him they were no good, and Muir was no good. I'd never met the guy, right? But he was staying in Raymond's house, where he'd been. And this was in my house in Seavey Street. Raymond didn't get to see either one. The words got out, and I said, listen, he left a couple of streets. He said, away around your own house, don't want to see you. He came around the next morning. At the door, you had a key, we had the door. You know, you look after your sons. Am I talking about it? Yeah, so he says, Muir, nowhere to go in this, and he met him this year. But you know, to this day, and I'm not going to tell any lies about him, to this day, I don't know the full story about the drugs. Wish I did. I don't know, you have to be honest with you, were the drugs on him, the car he was in, because I dug in there a good bit, the contacts I had. And there were some other fellows supposed to be with him, and he didn't go. Hannick and Haggerty supposed to be there. Gary Haggerty, the Supercross one. And Hannick were supposed to be in the car. And I find it amazing, that incredible, that my son would be arrested and charged with drugs with these other people who was there. So who had the drugs? You know, I asked Raymond Crescent, actually, that belonged to, and with these drugs. And he turned around, and he was afraid to say. Every time in my life I see my son afraid to tell me something, that's there, and that's the truth. But before he would have said this, and he knew if it didn't make something, he would have told me, and it would have sorted. It's never anything major like that. And the police after was Raymond's mother, never ever came back to talk to me about the drugs. They never came back to talk to me and say, listen, the amount of drugs was there, supposed to be there, who had them, what car they were in. We never ever found that out. So I don't. So I spoke with a person who was in the police, decent cop. And he says, you know, the information he had, because he told me he owned that agent, and he was one of Halleck's original handlers. The idea was there. And he told me, he says, the reason your son was over there now, he was the only one there, wasn't a police informant, so it looked good, and he was ex-RAF. That was the nearest I ever got to knowing anything relating to the drugs. The police shut it all down and kept it quiet.
How long did the drug incident happen before Raymond was murdered?
Months.
So after the drug incident, and I'm sure you tried to speak to him and you'd raised your concerns about the company that he kept, did you hope that he was going to pull away from?
Well, he didn't need to pull away from. This is a great thing about it, in one way. Afterwards, Halleck, Haggerty and 10 others got arrested in Portadown, attacking an LVF pub. They went with a gun, tried to burn it's a pub that Billy Wright supposed to, like the Golden Hen, and there's supposed to have been at least 30 of them went down. The police were aware of what was going to happen, that they were going down, and the police gave these people a eyeball and a free passage down, a clear passage down. From what I heard, somebody had seen them get in the pub, all charging in the pub. A member of the public, local member of the public, rang the police, and the police were told not to respond. It's not, anyway, tried to burn it down out of the firearm. So they caught three cars of them. Just a lot of cars. So it was like a convoy of cars going down, and the police just ignored it. And there was real tension between the LVF and the UVF at the time. They were all remanded. They caught me a firearm, arson, members of a paramilitary organization. They got 3 years, 18 months in prison, and the UVF didn't investigate. How did it get only get 3 years? Well, all that there, you know. Shots were fired or something in the pub, threats and all this here. So he didn't have any dealings with them.
So Raymond was pulling away. However, he remained friends with one individual in the UVF, and that individual was arrested and remanded in custody over the bar attack, and Raymond went to visit him.
The day he went up to see him, a couple of the UVF ones up visiting, and one of them gave him a lift up in the car. Well, they were in the car, going to the prison room, coming back. He seen Judas, who told him that UVF are going to give him a punishment soon because of drugs. Raymond said to me one time before, oh, the UVF says they're going to shoot me in the leg. I says, not be touching you. And I said, if you hear anything at all, you could tell me. He says, I'm not going to touch any son of mine, UVF or whoever they are.
And Raymond agreed out of fear, because what would the alternative have been?
He believed that what I believe is, the only one seen it this night, I'm going to get away, Nick, and that's what over and done with. They won't bar with me. And he went with him in the car afterwards that night, and they murdered him up with Billy Duff Corley.
They beat Raymond with concrete blocks, and his injuries were so severe he could only be identified through his fingerprints. I can't even begin to imagine, Raymond, how you feel even having to talk about that, and thank you for doing it, because I know how hard it must be to have to relive and go over those things in your head. You know, what could anything have been different? And
well, you know something? The policy of the RUC, PSNI, was responsible for murdering my son and that of other victims, because the policy that they had was informants, Mark Halleck, Gary Haggerty, and the guy that murdered my son got out on weekend parole, the main murderer of them, got out on Friday and murdered Raymond the next day. I went back to jail on Monday, and the police had information from all their informants. Two detectives went up to interview him in the prison, the maze, and the prison authorities wouldn't let them in to question him. Gary Haggerty admitted at a state briefing, I think it was 2014, roughly, 7 years after Raymond's murder, was it? Or that's 17 years after that. He had rang his handlers from the maze prison to say what was going to happen to Raymond. I've seen some of his debriefing. He rang to tell him he was going to be killed, he was in danger. He rang at the special branch handlers and the names of the handlers, and they said they never got the message. Their offices are on 24 hours a day, or CID cop told me. 24 hours a day, it's manned. It's a recording machine in case somebody maybe out to toilet or something, but it's manned. There's a bed and all that. They'd had my son be murdered, and after not him being murdered, they covered it up. Over that period of time, it showed the extent of what the UVF wanted and what the police have wanted. The UVF have tried to murder me a lot of times. They made a car bomb. Now, that for a car bomb attack on somebody, it had to be sanctioned by the chief of staff, UVF. UVF says that didn't sanction the murder. No, that's nonsense. They made a car bomb to blow me up. They tried to kidnap me in Belfast. They arranged to shoot me coming out of the bar. The range one day I was at the graveyard, and the police came flying in, ordinary cops, and what that was for, the UVF intended to shoot me dead at Raymond's grave. The police, numerous times, it came to me, there's a threat on your life. And who is it? Lawrence Paramilitary's handed me the document and went away. When the police told me my son was murdered, he came to my house. He came in. I had a friend in the house with me. I went in the kitchen and he just says, your son's been, body's been found. And I started to shout. I didn't remember what else he said.
Did you know he had been missing at that stage, Raymond? Or
no, that was a Sunday. They killed him on Saturday night. And it was a bitter cold night, freezing night. Left his body lying there in the state they left him in.
When was the last time you had spoken to him?
Wednesday. He wasn't on, got the Cannon Peel, was it? A week after, else days, I forget. But it was a Wednesday I was with him. And he'd started working on. The calmest way the police told me, and after telling me, as soon as they told me, a minute or two later, they're out of my house. There's no necessity to leave someone here with you, or else here. Then you've got to go around and tell your family. You have to tell your sons. You have to tell Raymond's mama. One of the hardest bits was our two with those, you know, was telling us growing. And all through it, never in my life have I ever asked anybody to do anything for me or support me or anything. It's here, even the troll of the paranormies. I've done it myself with no support. Political parties. Not one politician can near his mommy's house with a coffin sitting. Not one politician came out and condemned a murder. Not one of them even left a sympathy card. This was the leadership of unionist political parties. But they couldn't go to a funeral of a young lad who had a horrific murder. And I tell you, they had a horrific murder. It was a closed coffin. They've done nothing for us. Nothing whatsoever. They talk about their going to their churches on a Sunday. They talk about the it's against God's wishes. And we see them even, they talk about even things like people of same sex, you know, like, and relationship, that's against God. Was the murder of my son not against God's wishes too? And they chose to forget about that and all the other murders that these people carried out. Innocent people, innocent. Sean McKenna murder. Halleck was the first murder he admitted. Blaster with a shotgun. Sent me his handlers the next day and told them about the murder, sitting in the car crying, and they wouldn't charge him. My son should have been alive. That would be our people. But the police weren't allowed to do their job in any way whatsoever. We had no support. My sons had no support. They came after my son going to school, tried to kidnap him. 15, 16 years of age.
Was this another of your sons?
Yeah, the youngest son was, they was only 15. They tried to get him going to school, following his bus and all. They planned to shoot my house up beside the police station, but found it Haggerty's debriefing. Me and my young son lived with me. They were going to shoot the house up. And the police didn't warn us. The same way they didn't warn me. So again, the police played God with Raymond, an enemy murdered, and they're going to play God with me and my young son. They're trying to get into my house one night at 3 o'clock in the morning. Three gunmen, en masse, from UVF, six doors from the police station, my camera, and didn't wear a mask. I rang the police station three times, 999, at the police, the emergency, 999, and the police didn't respond till after the gunmen went away. They couldn't get in. Because my big dog kept him out the front, Alsatian. But the police didn't respond. And I hear stories over the years later, people saying, you must have been a paramilitary. And I says, why? Well, says, because you're looking after yourself. I said, well, had I been in the UDA and my son was murdered, the UDA went against the UDA, UVF, wasn't it? Well, had I been in the UVF and UVF members done it and it wasn't sanctioned, they would have been shot there by the organisation. I said, but I'm not going to try and defend myself against these things because people know me from when I was 16 and my hatred towards the paramilitaries. You know, it's well known in the Newton Abbey North Belfast area. No time for them. But the murder of a young fella and for the state to cover it up, and not just the state, both the DUP and the official unionists were complicit in the cover up because the state is silent. Neither me, my sons, or my ex-wife I'll never forget that. We want the same as our families. We want justice. No matter who it leads to, we know who carried it out, you know, and the politicians can come off of their rhetoric. Oh, we did murder your son. We ain't saying you. We agree with it. But you made sure that the people that done it weren't going to be charged and you still continue to do it.
And you mean by their lack of action?
The lack of words, lack of action. Promises made by a very senior unionist politician. Today, he's a very senior one. Years ago, he was well known, but now he's fairly claimed the latter. He had a promise to name the killers in Westminster for us. For the witnesses, that never happened. I don't profess to be some angel. I don't do drugs. I'm not involved with crimes. The things that broke the law, was to defend my family. The only way I know, because going to the police was a waste of my time. My son's going to the police, waste their time, and they know it. Houses attacked. So I do it the only way I know. I'd stand up and hit them. There was never the balaclavas. And then the politicians, this is the sort of people they are. And I emphasize the DUP in this. And this was under previous leaders. I met Peter Robinson several times with Ricardo Ramos for an ordinance, and he was always civil to me. And to be honest, Ian Paisley, senior, I'll say this, was no Christian man because he lied to me. Took me 9 years to see him. After Ramos, 9 years it took him to have a meeting with him. It's lasted 2 or 3 minutes. Storming, he says, I have to go in the chamber here. The Arlene Foster, 10 phone calls to our office in Bell, storming and in a skimmel, and her staff were really good to me, really nice people. And you can imagine a wee lady on the other end of the phone, it sounded like a wee country church woman who would put the best stealth out if you go to her house, you know. They were so nice to me. And all I wanted was for her to meet me and my ex-wife over Raymond's murder. Because somewhere else, she was going up meeting up a shadow, meeting UDA ones. She got photos taken all and our DUP members are with the gangsters, UDA people, and a UDA office in the Senegal. She wouldn't even return a phone call. She wasn't even recognizing Raymond was dead. And she calls herself a Christian. Just didn't want to know. Didn't want to know us in any way whatsoever. I remember getting brought to court with people over for doing the double. And I pleaded guilty. And I actually pleaded some charges, which I wasn't guilty of, just to get the case done. Just went in and out. People in the DUP made a statement that day and gave it to the press. People in court for doing the double. They never made a statement of one of my son's murder. And this is because I'm from a unionist community and I dare to speak out and tell the truth of what the parties, how the party have ill-treated victims, particularly within their own community.
I can't begin to imagine what it's like to lose a child in those circumstances and then to feel like you've been ignored, that you're getting no help. How have you coped, Raymond, with that?
I will not beat me. And people can turn around and say, and they're nice compliments. The son be proud of you. I'm not doing this for my son, be proud of me. Because if it was me who was dead, Raymond would be doing the same thing along with his brothers. I cope with it simply because I got enough justice for my son. The state would love me to give up. The UVF would love me to give up. Raymond's murder. I emphasize this, right? It was clear. My son's murder was the downfall of the UVF. They destroyed the UVF in North Belfast, the killing squad. All those people are all split up because we're all exposed. The failed shootings took place among them. But they also exposed it. The leadership in the Shankill, the chief of staff, as a long-term state agent, both out of MI5. So my son's murder has brought down the UVF. And I'll say this, and the UVF will not beat my family.
You said yourself, Raymond, that you met with the UVF after Raymond's murder. And I mean, that must have been a tremendously hard thing to do. Were you given a reason as to why he was murdered?
They denied it. Broke a word. I named him, the killers. Then a senior man who's there, Norman Sayers, who knew me from the past, because they sent for me one time, the UVF, they wanted to speak to me, because a couple of men in a pub, there's three of them, four of them, and they had a young lad. So I put them out and hit them and lifted their hands to me. They got hurt. And they went crying. Four men went crying. Thugs. And they wanted to speak to me. Nor and I went and went apart, but I seen them. And he was straight with me. He says, what happened? I told him. There's none this here. You can't do that. He says, come in the place. They behave. They don't behave. And they lift their hand. This is what happens. They had a wee 18-year-old lad in the toilet, give him a beating. But the guy says to me, I want to tell you, I wanted to shoot them. I was going to put, they put it two in their heads. He says, but it's taken out of my hands. They said they were having an inquiry, and I went and met these three guys and the second headquarters in Eagle. And I parked just down the street from it. Never in my life. When I went up the stairs to it, there was a wee room, and Sayers was there, and he says, you have to go in there. And I said, you got in it? He says, no, and I went in. There's three hooded men, and my balaclava was in the eyes, the mouth cut. And one of them, the mouth was cut out, and he had a wee thin moustache. In East Belfast, UVF one. He lives in East Belfast, the Craigie Estate, but he belonged to Shankill. At that time, he was number two to an agent who set me up to be murdered in the John Hewitt Bar one time. wanted to meet me here. Wasn't right. Murder squad, two guys come in. I wasn't there. They went, they had sheets of paper and the details writing down with them, an hour or two. And they look in this. I said, well, you just need to look in that. These people murdered my son. David Irvine spoke to me and all. He lied to me. He covered it up. I listened to these things about Irvine. And I asked people, tell me one thing you ever done for unionism and victims. I tell you the one thing. He helped cover up the murders, his own reasons for it. And you can be sure it was financial reasons. Truth has to be told to these people. I came out of the place and the way out, I said, I mean, when you go out on the main road again, don't be looking back. You know, it's me. What a thing to say. No going out. So I went down the steps, opened the door, and I went outside. There's a couple of guys were standing there. So I was walking down. The car was just down a wee bit. And I happened to turn around. There's one coming out. Had balaclavas on. It was out. It was that person from the Craigie estate. Real rat. And in no time, the police was out of the house in a short time. That within hours or days, was a warning. There was an attack being planned on me by those paramilitaries. What the hindsight's a wonderful thing. But what it was, the meeting wasn't an inquiry to help Raymond's murder. Investigation. The meeting was about the UVF find out how much I knew about it.
And how much did you know?
Practically everything.
And that put an even bigger target on your back.
Yeah, but it's amazing. It shows you this big, brave organization that has up ones for God and Ulster. It's for money on their sales. It should be on their plans because that's what it's all about. They were determined to keep me quiet. The only way they could do it was to kill me. And I came out at Haggerty's debriefing. He's a big, tough guy. Patriots, God's army. When they planned to shoot my house up to kill me, and instead of me saying this, it's Gary Haggerty saying that his debriefing. He says on it, after it was decided, their bosses and a unit was going to do it, go do the shooting. They couldn't get anybody to do it. They were scared. And they were scared in case they missed. Those new, what they were coming back, because I wasn't going to sit in the house.
How long was this after your son was murdered?
He was murdered in November 97, so it was 98, I think it was.
Did you ever feel scared, Raymond? I know you've said you don't fear these people, but, you know, in your lowest and darkest moments, did you not fear for your life?
No. What could they do that they didn't do, young man? You know, what they even resorted to? Three bars in Belfast. I would have went and had a drink. Two bars in the club, the old sports club. And I drank the Monaco bar for years. People knew where to find me on a Saturday. Raymond would come in there, see me and company all mixed. And also the John Hewitt. Even if from the pubs and told them that it served me, their staff would be sat there. I remember going to the sports club one Saturday. My mate and other ones would come in to meet us, like five of us every Saturday. And the chairman called me to say it in their room. Should you call? I knew what was going to be said. I turned around and I says, Raymond, well, I knew we got a call that it was served. They're going to shoot our staff. I said, I understand. I says, I'll leave. I'll get my mate. He says, no. He says, paramilitaries don't tell us who can come in. This is a mixed club. You come in here with your friends. No trouble. All the time, like the time you've been coming in here a few years. The Monaco bar, I spoke with the owner of the bar. He's dead now, good man. With the yarn, I said, you don't want me to come in it? I honestly, he says, no. Same attitude. The John Hewitt, again, John Hewitt went up the Shaggle and seen David Irvine. This is no joking. And says, I called the bar that the server in McCord. The staff will be shot. Irvine spoke with the UVF and said, listen, the staff's okay. Nothing's going to happen, but McCord's different. That's the real David Irvine. People have to know that. The real Irvine, the UVF man, who didn't believe in what he's trying to say on the TV. Believe me. So that threat stays. And you know something? For me on a personal level, I'm glad in one way it does stay because it shows I've been telling the truth.
So to this day, you're still under threat from the UVF?
Yep. And I'll tell you, and people think it's bravado or being John Wayne. Go and help the man that tries it, and if he misses, and I'll say it, he may leave the country because I won't let it go, the same as young Raymond's case.
And talking about the campaign for Raymond, you have been a constant voice for victims and speaking out against paramilitaries. You've been involved in so much in trying to change communities here, mostly Protestant, Unionist, Loyalist communities that are still under the control and coercion of loyalist paramilitaries. Not all, but some. Tell me about the report that was written by Nuala O'Loan, the police ombudsman, that basically lifted the lid on the levels of collusion within loyalist paramilitaries.
It was Operation Ballast. They call it, anyone wants to go in the ombudsman's office and get a copy of it. Simple. What it states, pours by that thick. Not just Sean Raymond's order, but other murders, sectarian murders, and plus murders within the Unionist community. It states there was collusion in young Raymond's murder and other murders. Raymond's case was the first case in Stroud's. The collusion was proven. It's a groundbreaking thing. Very embarrassing for the British government. Very embarrassing for the police. Very embarrassing for the EVF, because they say what I had been saying. And what nicest people have been saying for years, there was collusion with the EVF and all these paramilitaries. The IEC, PSNI, you only proved it, what I was saying. The only debate you can have on it, who was worse, the IEC or the EVF? So toss a coin. You see, the morning of the report, it was in the Storm Hotel. I was in the building early that morning, and it was there. I didn't time to read it. I didn't see it right. Nuala made sure there'd be no leaks in it. People didn't know this. Through Nuala, the police picked me up at my house here because it was believed there was going to be an attack on me. Be shot. EVF was planning to shoot me. So Nuala pushed it too, and the police had to come to my house, pick me up, and my family were all given police protection to get to the hotel. No Unionist politicians on it. Don't came to storm it.
When you read about your own son's murder and the investigation into it, were you shocked?
Well, you know, for our family, nothing could really shock us relating between the paramilitaries and the police, because I've been saying for years, the police were so corrupt. Few good cops. They spoke to us privately. Weren't allowed to do their job.
What did the report say about Raymond's murder?
They refer to Mon D. About weekend prison. No way to prison the weekend. But refer to Hannigan Haggerty, two leaders. They talk about a lot of our shootings and murders over the years. My complaint was upheld. The only one was, and it says that no one had been arrested and charged. And it says people had been arrested, but I was referring to when people get arrested, they get charged. No, some serious like that. Of course, there's so many informants, that ever, all the details. You know, if I can get it through different people, you think with all their agents, what they were getting? Everything. But the report, quite clear, Ray McCord would have been alive only for collusion.
No one has ever been convicted of Raymond's murder?
Nope, no one has been charged. And you would have think, with collusion proven, that policemen would be charged? No. A policeman gets charged, it's a paper trail end of her up a ladder that'll go, and after they get to the top table, and all you see is the paper trail end continue to demonstrate. It does. Make no mistake about it. Because the money to pay these people didn't come from Northern Ireland budget, it came from London.
When you were reading how protected the likes of Mark Haddock, Gary Haggerty was, that should have shocked you.
No one could have believed, because Nuala didn't believe, when I first told Nuala about those stories, I walked into the office, it was too far, like, you know, and I kept saying, because Nuala would have offered, had they asked me, how did you get this information? And I says, doesn't make any difference where I got it, Nuala. She had to ask me a question, simply, you know, she wasn't being nasty or rude to me. I was able to, over the years, see certain documents, secret sensitive documents, which revealed lies that the police had told the other families. It wasn't the only murder to cover it up on, by any means. But people talk about informers now, and they have a different sort of mindset. We're talking about senior people within republicanism, senior people within loyalism, and people years ago wouldn't have believed that. People who probably hold big senior positions within these sort of organizations would never believe that they were informants. But more and more is coming out, and myself and other people talk about it sometimes, and we say, when we're dead and gone, no doubt in years to come, more names will come out because these people will be dead by then. It'll be an embarrassment to tell the powers that be. I was arrested in the graveyard, that place, and spent 3 days in Armagh Oryx, the interrogation centre. They tried to scare me. Special unit of the police, and they were supposed to shoot me dead in the graveyard.
Why were you arrested?
They arrested me on the Special Powers Act or something like that, or Terrorism Act, which I didn't even understand. I thought you had to be a paramilitary out there. And they gave me a rough time in the arrest. These guys at a Special Patrol Group headquarters from Castlereagh arrested me and threw me to the ground in plastic ties on my wrists. and put a rifle to my head when I was on the ground. And then what had happened, people say I'm exaggerating. Let me tell you, I'm saying it's the truth. But there was a meeting took place in police headquarters the morning after my arrest. It was a Monday. I was arrested. And Tuesday was a meeting in police headquarters. And a very senior police officer, obviously can't name it because of label, but a very senior police officer asked what went wrong. We're supposed to shoot me, and a gun would have been found. And what happened, there was an elderly man in the graveyard they didn't see and shouted over something. I didn't see him, I heard a voice, and I was lifted, and it brought me out. It was my car and another car, a fella I was meeting, who told me he was under threat from the UVF. He helped to set me up, and it was the church minister sent them to me. He said, there's a fella under threat from a UVF, would you meet him, give him advice? I said, certainly. Called him a house to see me, and then he rang me again. He asked to meet him at this place, and he says, follow me. And we went to the graveyard, and we're talking in the graveyard. He's here now. Next minute, when we started to talk, the police came out flying in. Then it took him away, and then it kept me there. I goes to get up. I said, I'm getting up. Starting to rain. I took cramp my legs. And I said, I want to get up. Yeah, I'm getting up with cramp. The cop says, you get off. I'm not being effing down with this. It was a rifle. Drag me up. And we take me out. On the way out, my car's sitting there, and the other man's car's there. And I said, what's that bag there? He said, I don't know. He says, what is it? You must know. I says, why would I know? That's my car there. So they took me away, took me in the back of it, kept my hand, had my hands, I guess, and the arm bonds, plastic ties on it. So circle used to actually stop my hands. I was around, it went numb. Went all the way to the Armagh. It wasn't a word spoke. And they brought me in, and it sat me about 4 hours or so. Clothes was wet, t-shirt and that. The forensic people came. The guy came down from Derry. He was dead on fella. They'd done these forensic tests, swabs, my hands, my eyebrows and all this. And I said, what's this for? He says, to see if there's any explosives or gunpowder or something. He says,
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I would have it. I said, I'm not a paramilitary. The police is trying to scare me. My son was murdered. The guy was no son. He says, listen, mate, this is my job. I have to, this is my job. And I said, I understand that. So after he left, it was about 11 o'clock at night, and I'm sitting in the room. I'll tell you, it was before he left, before he came, that's what it was. And this guy was sitting there side of the big table in the room, and the door was left open. And he asked for water. And he gave me a plastic cup and I put that much water on. So they put down the boot, was giving water. They don't play mind games. So I'm looking at the guy. I says, you just fell a threat me up in the graveyard. I put the rifle to me. As the ground. He knocked me down with a rifle to get up and all. He's cursing away at me. He never spoke. He looked at me. So they had the cuffs off me, the plastic ties. So I get up. And he says, knock me down now. And they were all out of cell. They were all out of the room. Thanks when he came in. But this guy, he was in charge, like ginger sandy hair fella. He said, it's very simple, McCord. Sit in the chair. He said, you get knocked down in the chair. Drag me. You know, I looked down and laughed, man. They got another couple of boys come in the room. I sat down. He says, I know it sounds out of you. The plastic ties are on again. I got a couple of days. It was on Monday, Tuesday. I got out on Wednesday.
What were they questioning you on? What was the accusation?
You know, it was amazing. They says you've bomb making equipment or something. Try to something. I says bomb making equipment. I didn't answer. And he says you're ready to clear office. It was closed. No, we in the house surgeon. I was going on holidays on Wednesday, to Cyprus. So I'd been in the town Monday morning. I bought T-shirts and there was a chair. Had them all sat on the wee labels in it. And I turned around and my passport was sitting there, getting everything ready for all out now. And I says, I have a holiday booked. I'm going on Wednesday to Cyprus. You know, and you're going to do something and go away. I says, do what? I had a cupboard in the house and it was out of some furniture place and you build it. You see, and the house I'd been before, I took a shower out of it. Slightly sharp, brought it with me. The pipe is as thick as your finger. Right? It says we can interpret that as ball making stuff. I said, I think this is my finger. A wee thin pipe, 15 mil pipe. And you have glue on it. I said, that's to put the unit together. You see it? That's the tag. I was explaining this to me in the interview. These other ones. And I says, but if you see those wee wooden dowels, goes at blah, then it's here. And all be there. But he wasn't aware of this. This was information he'd been given to him. And I said, you know, the bomb making, I had to turn around. And he says, what was the pipe, bit of pipe for? I said, you see it, there's a shower there, as the pipe comes down, it's only 15 mils thin pipe. He says, here, would be the thickness of a finger and the length. I says, go to my previous house, you'll see it. No, but anyway, I get that Monday night. Tuesday and Wednesday. And there was a decent cup in Armagh, and he came into the cell and he seen me. He says, you know, he was a Christian man. He actually attended to see him. Turns out my sister Jane. Because he said to me that all sorts of must fail on me, built up on me. He says, you know, you shouldn't be in here, Mr. McCord. I says, you know what? And he expressed some of the thing that told me over my son's murder. So I'm very sorry what happened to some of these people to be in prison at June. And anyway, I got out in Wednesday, and a few weeks later, I was out walking the dog, and this unmarked card followed me and looked at it. And I knew looking at them, there were police officers. Just looked at them, it just looked like police officers or soldiers. And they come alongside me and just had a glance at me and went on up. A bit, and they looked just too long at me. But I turn around and walk my dog, big estate car drove up, blanked out. And the guy get out was a big nasty cat, a big tall guy from Goff. He get out and an old guy get out and he says to me, speak to you. And he was out of almost trying to say that. There was a fellow walking his dog. He says, what do you want? Your name. I says, you want my name? You're yes at me, are we? He says, I want your name. I says, I don't care what you want. I'm not getting it. The dog I had was Nikita. I said, somebody helped to arrest me, won't you? He goes, no way you're going to arrest me, that dog. So this is no joke. I'm just trying to give me a hard time pushing. And he asked our fellows, I was a rammer. The guy gave his name as Mickey Mouse. He didn't want this in the fella. He says, you asked me my name and you arrested me all week in the graveyard. You know what that cop said to me? Talk about the justice system. Stay at the graveyards.
What did he mean by that?
A warning. That's why I warned. The hint was, I interpret it as things can happen to you in graveyards.
You've talked about so much there of prior to Raymond's murder and after, and you have not had an easy life, but you have tried to make other people's lives easier through your campaign work. I don't even know where to begin with that, Raymond, but you, since Raymond's murder, you've been outspoken, you've been involved in many cross-community groups, you campaigned against Brexit, and to this day, you continue that type of work. Why do you do it for?
Believe it, people's being betrayed by the political people in the country. And most of all, you know, it's a selfish thing. I want justice for my son. I have always believed that I've never had political beliefs. I've no interest in religion. And that people, she wants to have someone, they're very simple. Have grandchildren, have friends, have relatives, and have health problems. And if an ambulance had to come to get me, or a family member, I'm not asking the ambulance driver, is he a Protestant or a Catholic? I'm not going to face, where do you live? If I get took to a hospital, and I've been in a hospital a lot over the years, no members of my family. I don't care why the doctor or nurse is black or white or what colour or what religion, or because it doesn't come into it, you know. And as I'm saying, people over the years, our political people have hyped it up. When you're working with people and victims and people that work with a lot of families or sons that have been under threat from paramilitaries, well, Lord, it's a Republican. And if it would ask me, could I get the threats removed? That's amazing. After all this time, probably every family that asked me to help them, they could help their sons so that they'd be shot or kneecapped or even something worse. The threats were always lifted, and yet no threats ever lifted me. I've seen UVF and UDA and Republican organizations, people under threat, and it wasn't that hard to get them lifted, to be honest with you. The best way you get them lifted is it wants to speak to you, and they say, if anything happens to this young fella, seriously injured, he's killed. The next time you see me, it'll be with a TV camera at your door. And it's amazing how that works. You're not being brave, you're being truthful, telling them. I don't want to see our family suffer the way mine did. Well, their son's being murdered. And maybe the realizing that most of them involve antisocial behavior are low level druggies. They don't deserve to be shot dead or getting their knees blown off. No, because of it. Put them in prison, you know, turn it, put them in prison. And hopefully when they're in prison, they know they're not going to go back to it. Give them an opportunity. But, you know, when you're working with all those people, you don't see it as you're not a special person. You're putting their case forward because they're frightened. And it works. Unfortunately, in Northern Ireland, there's people don't want it to work.
Raymond, I've asked this question before to many people who've come on this podcast whose lives have been affected, destroyed, devastated by paramilitaries, because they still exist over 20 years since the Good Friday Agreement. How do you get rid of paramilitaries?
First of all, you treat them for what they are, criminals. That's all they are. The Good Friday Agreement will be 25 years old next year, and paramilitaries are still there. So treat them for what they are. They're criminals. They're not loyalists. Also, make it quite clear to them that they can't hide under paramilitary gaze, clothes, and put them in prison. No such thing as paramilitary wings. but go after them and forget that their leaders are informants and show the people. Don't worry about what the politician thinks. And another thing which they need to do, and I've called upon several times, they get funding from Stormont. They get funding from the EU. Dublin, and I remember meeting the Good Friday Agreement at Dublin a few months ago, the Selwyn Fjord people from Belfast. And again, the people that went down were for both communities. And I called them to stop off funding the all UVF-linked organisations and projects after what happened to Simon Coveney, because UVF were behind it. So stop all the funding. So you imagine, if all the funding stopped today, don't give them a week's notice, just stop it. Let the other ones take us to court, take them to court or whatever, right? And they ended up turning around and saying, listen, a few people lose their jobs, say them, we didn't cost you your jobs, we stopped the funding. See the people doing the drugs, the beatings, the extortion, they cost you your jobs. Our politicians, and again, what I said earlier, going up the shaggle, the DUP, senior people in the DUP getting their photos taken with certain individuals, they're giving them credibility. You earn credibility, it doesn't really hand it to you, and these people will never earn it or have it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.